Hello, I'm Kevin Keith. In this episode of Skeptical Ethics, we'll consider the role of skeptical objectivity in understanding social conditions. Are perceptions of social patterns a matter of scientific empiricism? Should we expect people to agree on how they perceive or categorize interactions in the social environment? And if they don't agree, is that evidence that such perceptions are inherently subjective and thus not amenable to rational examination? Before we start, let me remind listeners that the Skeptical Ethics series attempts to apply skeptical reasoning to value-based issues such as moral or cultural controversies. New listeners, or those who want to review the basic conceptual grounding of that enterprise, may wish to download the first Skeptical Ethics segment, Does Skepticism Lead to Agreement?, which appeared in Episode 2 of the Skeptical Connections podcast, and the second segment, Moral Agreement Among Skeptics, from Episode 3 of Skeptical Connections, for useful background. As skeptics, we want to base our beliefs and our ethical stances on a rational foundation. That requires logical inferences from values and principles informed as necessary by empirical facts. And it may seem obvious that intelligent, skeptical, and competent observers ought to be able to come to agreement on the things they see in the world. In fact, there is agreement among scientists and skeptics in many observations of natural facts, that is, material conditions in the physical world. There is less agreement over scientific theories explaining those facts, but scientists often do come to good agreement on what the facts themselves are. However, this is not the only kind of observation. There are what we might call social facts, as well as natural facts. By social facts, I mean things that take place in the human sphere, but are open to objective observation. For instance, that certain words or gestures are understood as offensive in a given social context is a social fact. How such expressions are interpreted differs from culture to culture and even between groups within a large culture, but when such expressions are used offensively, that they are indeed offensive is a fact. That there is prejudice against gays in American society is another obvious social fact. What public policies or laws are justified regarding issues affecting gays is a different moral and political question, but that many people show animosity to them as a social group is unquestionable. So, given that there are social facts such as these, that is, objective facts regarding how social patterns affect people socially or emotionally, should we expect rational observers to agree on these facts, the way they agree on scientific facts or facts of history? It matters a great deal whether they agree or not. Agreement on social facts performs the function of identifying and categorizing those facts. That is, identifying a given social situation in factual terms not only tells us what it is, but how it relates to other social issues, and how we are expected to respond to it. This explains why so many social controversies are characterized by conflict over what names to apply to the behaviors at issue. Affirmative action versus reverse discrimination, for instance. Aside from the propaganda value of such labels, the names identify moral categories that slant our reaction to the issue. If social leveling policies really are a matter of discrimination, that gives them a particular moral shading, different from how they appear if they are a means to equality. But still, in spite of controversies and political maneuvering, we do find agreement in many instances of social categorization. Virtually everyone now agrees that slavery was a moral crime. Our question for today, then, is why is there often disagreement on social facts? An obvious answer, as just noted, is that debates over social issues are often characterized by propaganda and posturing for political advantage, but that is not the problem I want to address. Are there ways in which even rational observers, acting in good faith, can fail to come to agreement in these cases? Although we want confirmable, objective facts as reference points for our arguments or skeptical analyses, some situations do not allow for clear and unambiguous empirical description. Some of the most contentious such cases are ones where the perceived phenomenon is a social pattern, such as racism, which is in some sense in the eye of the beholder. On one hand, it seems as if such phenomena should be empirically verifiable. That is, if racism really exists in a certain situation, we should be able to analyze that situation and point to specific characteristics that identify it as racist, or otherwise conclude that it doesn't meet the definition of racism. To do that, we would need a workable definition of racism in terms of characteristics of human interactions that do or do not justify applying that label, but in principle, it should be possible to come up with such a definition. But people of goodwill still disagree over the characterization of social situations, even when they agree in general terms on the nature of the phenomenon. That is, they may disagree on whether a given situation is racist, even if they agree on the general definition of racism. It is often difficult to apply definitions of social phenomena even when the definitions appear to be clear and unambiguous. Often, categorizing an event may hinge on the attitudes or intentions of the people involved, which are harder to characterize than their overt actions. Or it may involve complex phenomena that arise from multiple causes. Or it may involve disparate impact without an overtly discriminatory intent. Such complexities may create barriers to fully characterizing the situation in terms of social facts, even if the overt facts are clear. In addition, however, our skeptical stance alerts us to the fact that people have different experiences and perceptions, and different ways of understanding what they see in the world. Deciding which aspects of a given situation are its defining features may be a matter of differing perspectives, or differing sensitization to the factors that characterize and define social encounters. For instance, many people claim to be puzzled by the issue of what labels or names ethnic groups prefer for themselves. In the African American community, the terms colored or colored people are highly offensive to many, while the term people of color is regarded as respectful. To others, those terms may sound similar enough that the idea that not only do they have different connotations, but actually reside in different moral categories seems incomprehensible. The issue isn't really that difficult on simple factual grounds alone. Understanding the history of the use of the term colored should be enough to explain why people try to avoid it today. But knowing that history isn't enough to convey how viscerally that distinction strikes some people, and the way that impact gives the issue a dimension of respect and dignity, which is to say a form of moral value, that isn't apparent from the definitions of the words used or even the history of their use in discriminatory contexts. How to respond to these issues of perspective and experience? One solution is to privilege the perceptions of the people at risk. Using terms like colored people is racist if non-white people regard it as racist and the speaker doesn't heed that concern. The claim that the environment at a social event intrudes on or offends female attendees is true if the women at that event think that it is true, whether or not the men perceive it so or intended it to be so. This privileging brings the differences in perspective on that issue into the center of the question of identification and moral categorization of the relevant social facts. It informs the recognition of such facts with the way those facts function in the social context, part of what makes those facts what they are. But it may also seem to be a step away from objective analysis. If the facts of a given situation require a certain personal identity or experience to perceive, aren't those facts by definition subjective? I would suggest instead that personal history, experience, and cultural identity are not subjective filters, but a form of observational tools. Given the inherent ambiguities in understanding and characterizing social or sociological situations, it can be rational to accept characterizations that incorporate the perspectives of the people most affected by, most sensitized to, or most threatened by a given categorization. Similarly to the way that it requires a microscope to observe bacteria or a telescope to observe galaxies, it may require a certain social perspective to observe certain social facts, lacking which the perceptions of an observer without the right tools will not be accurate. Erring in this direction, rather than just putting the ball in the observer's court and applying the extraordinary evidence test, can be both a fail-safe procedure by incorporating the most useful perspective on a given social factual situation, which is rational, and b, sensitive to those most at risk, which is ethical. Unquestionably, this creates risks of subjectivity or moral exclusivity. I don't claim this is an uncontroversial suggestion, or easy to implement, or that it could not be taken advantage of maliciously, but it allows us to acknowledge the differing ways interpersonal behavior affects different parties with different cultural histories, an acknowledgement that is fundamental to reaching the real truth in such contexts. I'll be glad to hear your questions, comments, or reactions directed to skepticalconnections.com.